And now it's time for Power of Prophecy, continuing the legacy of Tex Mars, exposing evil, and promoting Jesus Christ as Savior. Here's your host, Jerry Barrett.
Hello, friends, and welcome to another edition of Power of Prophecy. I'm your host, Jerry Barrett, honored to have you join me again this week. I have asked my buddy from South Carolina to come back on the program. She's been a guest a few times already, and she is an editor at American Thinker. Her name is Andrea Widberg. Andrea, welcome back.
I am so happy to be back. I always enjoy our conversations.
So do I. What brought this on, I've got a dear friend in Michigan, and he's always sending me things that Whitmer, she just looks mean and just unhappy. And I guess that's part of being on the left, isn't it?
She looks like a Disney villain when they were still drawn pretty, but vicious. And I think you're quite right that unhappiness colors her features.
You just see it in her eyes. Her eyes are a dead giveaway. But Gretchen Whitmer and the other loony left up in Michigan have proposed a new law. The bill is HB 4474. So he sent me a link to Epoch Times, and I'm reading it, and I'm going, oh, my goodness, this is America. And then, well, as I'm wont to do, I always hang over to American Thinker. I do a search for Andrea's byline to see what all she's written about. And lo and behold, you covered the same topic. So I texted you first thing this morning and said, Andrea, would you like to come on? Let's talk about this, because it is a fact that the progressives have their crosshairs aimed directly at the First Amendment, don't they?
They do, because there are two things that are dangerous to a despot. One is an armed citizenry, and the other is a citizenry that can speak out against the regime. And not just against the people in the regime, but against the ideas driving it. And so if you want to control a country, the first things you must do is disarm the people and silence them. And, you know, you don't need to raise the specter of the Nazis. You can raise the specter of any totalitarian system, whether it's a military junta or a theocracy or Mao, Stalin, Lenin, Hitler, Pol Pot, Fidel Castro. They all silenced and disarmed their people.
You know, one thing that I learned about the Constitution, there is a reason that we have a Second Amendment. And I was taught that the reason it's there is to protect all of the other amendments that give us, that are part of the Bill of Rights, that give us freedom of speech, freedom of religion, freedom of assembly. You know, being that July 4th is coming up real quick and we're supposed to celebrate our national independence from the tyrant that was King George, the fact that this bill is even seeing the light of day, in the state of Michigan, let alone on the federal level, but in the state of Michigan, the fact that Whitmer and the other loony left deem the fact that your speech could be offensive to me, we're going to make that a hate crime. You know, nothing was more prevalent than the loony left's agenda to silence the populace was during the COVID-19 scamdemic, when Mayorkas and Jankiewicz tried to create the Ministry of Truth.
Yeah. You know, it's very interesting that you mentioned the revolution, because one could make an argument that the whole thing about a militia in the Second Amendment was to ensure government control, because the Americans, having just come off a revolution themselves, wanted to protect themselves against a subsequent revolution against them. But the fact is, the right to bear arms is embedded very deeply into the Anglo-Saxon history from which they came. And one of the great ironies of modern England, where the British are discovering they have no rights, is that after the glorious revolution of 1688, when James II, who was a Catholic and seemed to be trying to return the Catholic faith to England, when he left, that led to a bloodless revolution. It led to the Declaration of Rights of 1689. And they are somewhat limited rights because they did not extend to Catholics, who were still the bad boys of England. But what they did was they stated rights that were either by tradition or by the Magna Carta, long-held rights. And those were the freedom to speak out and petition government and the right then of Protestants to bear arms. And those were belief systems that the colonists carried with them to the 13 colonies. And ironically, when they finally tried to exercise those rights and rise up against what they viewed as British tyranny, Parliament said, you know, the Bill of Rights of 1689 only applies to the king. It was meant to apply to King William of Orange and his heirs, William III. It does not apply to Parliament. And for the next 200 plus years, Parliament abided by those traditional rights of Englishmen, even though it had disavowed them in order to corner the colonists and say, no, you don't have any rights against our legislation that's crushing your trade and illegal searches and seizures and quartering soldiers. But what's happened, as we've seen in the last 30 years in England, is the British are discovering they have no rights because Parliament disavowed them in the 1770s to defeat the Americans. And now we have the leftists disavowing them to defeat Americans. But the interesting thing about free speech is it's always been somewhat limited. The government can place limits on speech to protect children, which is why up until gay pride weekends, we did not, and drag queens, the government has always, at least in the modern era, protected children from pornography and other lewd things. And we have the right to defend against defamatory statements. You can have free speech, but you can't lie about someone and they can take you to court. Apparently though, if you are a member of Congress, like, what's his name again from Los Angeles, Pencil Neck Schiff.
Oh, that's
if you're Adam Schiff, there's not a lot you can do about lying. I mean, the sense that he was censured was very minimal. Even though he was in Congress, he could not commit a fraud against the American people in theory. And we also don't allow people to threaten criminal activities or, you know, there are certain things you can't do. You cannot say, I am going to kill you. And that is a direct threat and that is actionable speech. But what you can do is, up until recently, was say, no, you're not a woman. You're a man who would like to be a woman. And it's that speech that is very clearly what Michigan would like to criminalize.
What happened to this country that we seem to have lost all common sense and we're pushing pornography and sex education on pre-K and kindergartners all the way through elementary school?
It's a leftist march through institutions. They started in the 20s and have never stopped. For conservatives, it's always been win the battle, go back to normal life. But for the leftists, it's been, you know, the long march through institutions. It was Gramsciism, I think, Italian socialist philosopher who came up with that in the 20s and 30s. And most significantly, they took over colleges. And generation after generation, they generate more and more crazy ideas. And I've been aware of this since the late 70s because I went to UC Berkeley, but most people have become aware of it only in the last few years as they've finally, the dastardly villain who was pretending to be the maiden in distress, they've flung off the mask and said, aha, here we are and I am in charge of you and you will all, you know, succumb to my power. They've been changing the American mindset. That's what's happened. Over the last 100 years, they have changed American concepts of liberty. And for example, in, is it Oregon, Washington? I forget which state. They want to make it so that it is now child abuse not to mutilate a child's external sexual organs and not to give them toxic chemicals. Because after 100 years of marching through the institution, child abuse is no longer going after parents or other people who sexualize children, who physically abuse them, whatever. Now it's child abuse not to abuse children, not to sexually mutilate them, not to groom them. You change the language, you change the country.
Right.
Orwell knew that.
Boy, didn't he. You know, The fact that there are people complaining about book burning They're throwing that out. Oh, they're burning books out of the public libraries. No. What most sensible Americans are saying is get the smut and the filth out of the kids section.
Yep.
Not.
That's not book burning.
No, no, it's not. But you have to sensationalize it, Andrea, to get play on major news, because if it bleeds, it leads. So you have to excoriate the right, because all of a sudden they're destroying books and they're banning this and they're doing that. You know, this law that is in Michigan, that if it's passed and signed by Whitmer, if you are a concerned parent and you go to a school board meeting and disavow what they're doing and complain, that's hate speech.
Exactly. That's a perfect summary. And in theory, it is manifestly unconstitutional, because they're not saying defamation. So we're not talking about a man suing me in court because I said to him, you're not a woman, and he says, you've defamed me. This is the government zooming in to protect people's hurt feelings. And that is just so grossly unconstitutional. But I have to say, despite the fact that we got Kavanaugh, Gorsuch, and Coney Barrett on the court, and good for them for ruling as they did on Dobbs, they are on a few core things shifting conservative. But for the most part, I don't know if anybody's paid attention, but most decisions are 6-3 or 7-2, with only Thomas and Alito holding the line against a living constitution, which means no constitution at all, because it's whatever the judges want it to be, against changing terms, against encroaching government. Our Supreme Court is not a conservative Supreme Court. It's a very mushy Supreme Court that cannot be relied upon to defend things like speech.
It is lukewarm at best. I saw the recent ruling on speech was handed down, I think, earlier today. We're recording this on Tuesday, and 7-2. And you're right, it was, I think this one was only Justice Thomas and Justice Barrett that dissented from this ruling. But the fact that you have to, the justices have put so much emphasis on vague terms that if I said, you know, Andrea, you're in South Carolina and I don't care for people in South Carolina, so what you wrote in your article is a hate crime and I'm gonna file charges against you.
Mm-hmm.
That it doesn't compute.
It doesn't compute. And what you have to remember is, again, you're not allowed to say I'm coming to kill you. That's a threat. That's not actionable. But this is a law being written that will benefit snowflakes. I mean, we've heard for years about the kids on campus where, you know, words are violenced. So what you're talking about is a law that's written for the benefit of people who say, you genocided me when you denied transgenderism. You genocided me. And so we're dealing, what we've done is we have created a legal system that caters to the mentally ill. And the irony, of course, is that these mentally ill don't understand that they're just the current crop of useful idiots. What always happens is that a leftist revolution puts at the front line the most screaming, hysterical, deranged people. And then as soon as it gets power, it disposes of them very brutally. You know, leftists don't have room in their regimes for weak people, and mostly for crazy people. Crazy people are weapons. They're not long-term citizens of the left.
Right. You know, people have a hard time fathoming this, but I've done the back digging and the research as late as, I think it was 2019, so that's 3-4 years ago, the World Health Organization recognized transgenderism as a mental illness.
Yep. Oh, yeah, it's happened really quickly. And I will say that if you want to assign blame, Justice Gorsuch, who was told that he was a rigorous scholar and a textualist. Well, what is a textualist? It means that he just looks at the words of the Constitution. But what he did was open the door to transgender madness. because he looked at the word sex in the 1964 Civil Rights Act, and rather than looking at it as the legislature intended it to mean, which was clearly the male-female chromosomal gender binary and the traditional culture binary, because that's all they knew. They couldn't even have conceived of transgenderism. I mean, they'd always known about transvestites. Louis XIV's brother in France was a famous transvestite, but nobody ever, they called him Madame because he asked to, but nobody ever thought he was a woman. But what Gorsuch did was said, well, nowadays the word sex means sexual identity and gender identity and sexual orientation. So the Civil Rights Act applies to everything. Every workplace thing. And recently it came out that Fox Corporation, the Fox News Corporation, had this whole thing about transgender and gay and everything at the workplace website for employees. Now, it went so far overboard, it's very clear that the management at Fox has embraced the whole ideology. That's been obvious for a while because it's been respecting pronouns. It's been doing the they, them, and you know, calling Bruce Jenner she and things like that. But the fact that they have in their HR things all how transgenderism and all this has to be respected and sexual harassment and all of that, that was because of Gorsuch and his Supreme Court decision. I forget what it was, 2019 or 2020. Gorsuch, the quote-unquote conservative, did this to us by completely ignoring legislative intent. Essentially. And so they, words mean whatever you say they mean. It's like Humpty Dumpty when Alice meets him in Through the Looking Glass and he explains to her, he says to her explicitly, words mean what I say them mean. It's a matter of who's to be in, who's to be master. And the left is definitely master of the words.
You know, I've called public education indoctrination centers for a couple of years now because of what you mentioned earlier, the fact that cultural Marxism seeped into the university and has expanded its tentacles from department to department. Now math is white supremacy.
Just, 2+2. Woo!
But it has expanded. So it starts in the university and the students pick up on it. And then they go into corporate America or they return to academia and take up professorships and they expound upon that ideology. You know, back in the '80s when political correctness started taking a foothold, and I've been anti-PC since I was born, but you know, political correctness came on the scene and you need to do this and be mindful. If you can go back to that and look to where we're at now, you can see that speech is a dangerous tool and must be put in check.
Agreed. And you know, when it first came along, I was naive. I was a Democrat then. And I thought it simply, it meant being polite, treating people with respect. I thought political correctness meant not calling Black people the N word or, you know, Jewish people the K word or whatever. I thought it meant simply that in workplaces, we treat people with the same respect that we would accord an elderly friend of our parents. You know, to me, it was simply a matter of institutionalizing politeness. But by the 1990s, I had figured out what was going on, especially because someone I knew got caught in the crosshairs of a female minority who didn't like him. He was not a very likable person and went out of her way to try to destroy him by claiming that he had sexually harassed her, which was obviously bogus if you knew this guy who that was not his thing. But because a minority woman made the accusation, he was almost destroyed by it. And that was in 1994. And that was when I started on my path to, I never say I'm a Republican. I don't have much respect for modern Republicans. My path to being a conservative.
You know, there is a world of difference between being a Republican and a conservative.
A friend gave me a great expression. Republicans are Democrats who obey the speed limit.
You know, you constantly hear, well, he's fiscally conservative. But no, he's not. I just...
Yeah.
You know, I worked for a guy many years ago in the automotive industry, and he was a very successful small business owner. He looked at me and he said, Jerry, you can pencil whip any problem into a rational solution that suits what you want.
Yes.
Anything. And that's exactly what the left has done, gosh, since, what, the Civil War?
Well, it's been going on a long time. And apropos how it's seeped into the institutions, a friend of mine, quite conservative, is a social worker in a large urban school district. And one of the things she has to do is college students who want to become social workers do internships in her school district. And she has sent me the worksheets she is required by the school district and the college that works with the school district, the worksheets that she's required to fill out. Now, she's older, as I am, and in the beginning of her career in the school district, the worksheets were about relating to students, listening well, working well with parents. The worksheets now are all about DEI, about whether the student's race and sexual identity have been respected, and whether the parents have worked with the school to respect their say, everything. This is what the students are graded on. If they do not fill in those checkboxes, they cannot get their degrees. And those are the ones who go into schools. It's also, my father was a school teacher, and I am a student, a public school person all the way from kindergarten through law school. And I can count, that's, let's see, 16 years of education. I can count on the fingers of both hands with a couple of fingers left over the number of good teachers I had in the public school system. And that's because San Francisco and then UC Berkeley were at the forefront of all the craziness. So I know exactly what's going on in the schools, although it's now exceeded anything I ever experienced. It's gone warp speed. It's gone to areas where no person has ever explored the craziness, but I saw it all. And then when my children hit school in California, they were just getting over the madness of whole words teaching, which is we have a 26 letter alphabet that is phonetic. Sure, it has weirdnesses like the word niece or neighbor or February, which is how it's spelled, but mostly it's phonetic. If you can learn the dominant sound of letters and letter pattern recognition, you can read. So in the 80s, in the 70s, they did this brilliant experiment to go whole word because they said, well, Chinese do whole word because it's all symbols and they are much more literate than we are. Well, the thing about the Chinese students is they study language 6 hours a day, 6 days a week. Our students were getting it 40 minutes a day, 5 days a week, taught poorly by semi-literate teachers themselves. And, you know, every bit of craziness is this kind of stupidity behind it, and then putting it in the hands of increasingly inept generations of teachers who are the product of the last generation of inept teaching. So there are some teachers who are passionate and wonderful and brilliant. I can't remember if you have one of those in your family. And they are people to be honored and tremendously respected. But our system is intended to dumb down the teachers so that eventually the only thing they can teach is letting students know that they're neither male nor female and let's talk about my sex life.
Right. Yeah, my wife was a teacher for almost 30 years, elementary. And yeah. She loved those children.
Yep.
She had one parent who was livid that she didn't give this woman's son an A on something he had done. And, she said, I don't give grades. Students earn them. And then she said, why are you making him learn to write in cursive? It is not required by state law in Texas.
Don't get me started on cursive. My kids went to Montessori for the first few years, and Maria Montessori did something most educators don't do. Educators start with theories and then stick them onto children, like whole language. Maria Montessori spent many years in the slums of Rome looking at how children learn. And one of the things she noticed is that when children scribble, unless they're mentally ill, children who are deeply disturbed do angular scribbles. But most children, the natural motion of a child's hand is circular. So what's easier to learn than print is cursive because cursive is circular. And my children, when I pulled them out of Montessori, had the most gorgeous cursive handwriting. And I put them in a public elementary school and their teachers could not read cursive. And so they told them do print. And my children didn't know how. The teacher didn't know how to teach them print, just said you have to print. And so my children have the most warped print you've ever seen. It's slow, it's laborious, it's unintelligible. And they went from having perfect and naturally occurring cursive. But their teachers, again, this is generational. Your wife comes from the generation when teachers were still people of substance and they weren't in the San Francisco Public School District. But my kids' teachers, and they were paid really well. They worked 7 months a year. They got an amazing salary and benefits, which certainly was not the case for my father, who worked 7 months a year and then spent the remaining months scrambling desperate for any work, some, you know, tutoring, summer school, night school, anything to feed his family. These little ladies were as dumb as rocks. They were unbelievable because I was on the Parents Association and I was liaising with them and I would just ask them questions. I was never rude to them, but I just say, well, why do you do this? I don't know. Well, what does this mean? I don't know. This is spelled wrong on my daughter's homework. No, no, that's what the teaching book says. No, it's spelled wrong. They were all cheerleaders. They were cheerful and perky and they did all the assignments and they knew nothing. A more ignorant group of perky, cheerful, nice women you'd never meet.
Right. Considering the decline in education, our test scores are middle of the pack to the bottom. And they keep saying, well, if we gave the teachers more money, if we threw more money at, no. And I was contemplating this the other day, and it's funny that we got on this little tangent here, but what's wrong with teaching somebody how to memorize the multiplication table? That's what I did. How to add numbers, how to do division, you know, how to break down a sentence, whether it's a subject, a predicate. What is a modifier? Is it an adverb? Is it an adjective? We did sentence dissection when I was in school. So, you know, a lot of this has disappeared because of all of these newfangled ideas on how to teach children. You mentioned whole word. We're just going to have them memorize what this grouping of letters, this whole word means.
They have to memorize 40,000 words. And you know, the average American vocabulary by like 1985 was 50% of what the average American vocabulary was when World War II began. And I'm willing to bet that since 1980 or 85, it's declined by another 50%. So eventually when there are only 5 or 10 words, we can memorize some whole language, no problem. But, you know, part of the problem is how American education works about memorization and stuff. One of the things that's always bedeviled me is I have a hard time memorizing things that lack meaning. Meaning spurs my memory. And again, this is one of the things I liked about Montessori. Maria Montessori understood that if you tell people why something matters or how it works, they will learn it more readily. So she already had interesting toys for the children that were tactile toys when they were very little to learn about squares and cubes and multiplication. So when they started memorizing, the memorization was on a foundation of hard realism. So it wasn't just memorize this and you're going to be tested on it. It was this is how it works and this is how it matters. And one of the worst things about American education is it is completely leached of meaning. And that makes it harder for people to learn. Without context, without valuing America and her system, why does American history matter? And if you're going to be told that we have a horrible history, and if you're white, you're evil, and if you're this, you're a victim, and if you're a white woman, you're simultaneously a victim and evil, it is almost impossible to learn. The part of your brain as a child that processes data and memorizes things and incorporates them literally shuts down.
Well, Andrea, we have already blown through 30 minutes, so we're going to have to take a brief pause. And when Andrea and I come back, we're going to dive right back in. You're listening to Power of Prophecy. Stay with us, won't you? We'll be right back. Hello, friends. Jerry Barrett back with you again. I want to tell you about a book that Tex Mars penned just before his passing, Psychopaths Yesterday, Today, and Tomorrow. And the reason it's relevant with today's program, Tex talked about crazy times. It's pretty obvious that we are definitely in a period of crazy times. Psychopaths, well, they're everywhere. And there are serious implications for you and I with these psychopaths running amok. They're running for public office. They're telling us what we can and can't do. These lockdowns from COVID-19, everything is just kind of coming towards a head, and we are living right in the middle of these crazy times. This book is the first and only book to fully explore psychopathy from a political social perspective. Tex explains the warped psychopathic mindset, and then he describes how a sick and decadent society fosters this psychopathic behavior. It also encourages disorderly, criminal, antisocial activity. This psychopathic activity is going to continue. It's going to ramp up. And anything goes is going to become the new mantra. Psychopathic con men who claim to be the elite are going to take charge of the government. They're going to make incomprehensible changes, and they're going to commit horrific crimes against the normal citizens. Christians will be front and center. This book, Psychopaths, Yesterday, Today, and Tomorrow. Powerful book. You need a copy in your library. If you think your friend needs a copy, call us up. Get one coming to him. It's 208 pages. It is a large format book, and we're only asking $25. Please add $6 for shipping and handling. That'll make your total for Psychopaths $31. You can order your copy by phoning us toll-free in Canada and the United States at 1-800-234-9673. Again, that's 1-800-234-9673. If you care to phone us on our regular line, that number is 512-263-9780. We're in the office Monday through Friday, 8 a.m. to 5 p.m. Central Time. We take Visa, MasterCard, Discover, and American Express. You can also use those charge cards on our secure shopping cart at powerofprophecy.com. There'll be an ad for this book, Psychopaths, Yesterday, Today, and Tomorrow, on our main page. Click the link and fill out all the information. Hit submit. We'll get it coming to you. If you want to send a check, money order, or cash, please make your check or money order payable to Power of Prophecy. And you can mail it to us here at 4819 R.O. Drive, Suite 102, Spicewood, Texas, 78669. Okay, and now let's return to our regular program. My guest today is Andrea Whitberg from American Thinker. Andrea, welcome back.
I'm glad to be back again. The first half of this show was so much fun. I can't wait to dive into the second.
I know. I just enjoyed chatting with you. We were talking, and you mentioned history. The fact that during the mostly peaceful riots of BLM and Antifa, where we're tearing down statues and we're complaining that a statue of Ulysses Grant, who freed all his slaves before he took over, you know, all of that is irrelevant to these people, but it's part of our history. We have good history, and America has bad history, things that we should strive not to repeat, But by removing statues or memorials or changing names of schools or highways because they were given to Confederate soldiers, we're erasing, almost like the Ministry of Truth, we're erasing that part of history. And the old saying goes, if you don't study history, you're doomed to repeat it. And that seems to me where the loony left has taken us.
Yeah, you know, the French Revolution, one of the things they did was that they announced that it was year one after the revolution succeeded because everything that came before was irrelevant. But we stand on the shoulders of giants. And the reality is that we arrived, well, one of the things is I always like to remind people that the reason the West did away with slavery wasn't because we were so much morally pure than previous generations, because all people in all times in all places have had slaves. And in fact, the Native Americans, like all Stone Age people, were big on slavery, because when you are in a war, unless you have a very powerful infrastructure after you're the victor, what do you do with your defeated enemy? You can't do concentration camps. You can't do a Marshall Plan. You either kill them or you enslave them. So slavery was actually the more humane approach in the past, even though maybe it's nicer to be killed quickly than work in the salt mines for 20 years. But what, and yes, the Enlightenment, there was a developing morality and a sense of the humanity of all of us, that your skin color shouldn't matter, that slavery violates the Eighth Amendment because thou shalt not steal should extend to stealing a person's liberty. There are all these things coming together, but what really came together was the Industrial Revolution. Because slavery is how people rise above subsistence level. Slavery works by harnessing someone else's labor for your benefit. So their standard of living goes down, yours goes up. So the two things that came together were capitalism, where people's self-interest aligns, where I want cash and you want widgets, and so we have something mutually agreeable. But the other thing that came along was fossil fuel, because fossil fuel, whether wood burning or coal burning or oil burning, made it so that we did not need to rely on brute force, coerced human labor to raise our own standards of living. It is the very fossil fuel that the left is trying to get rid of that keeps the West out of slavery. And that's about understanding history.
Right. Nobody wants to talk about that. The fact that Native Americans enslaved their defeated enemies. I mean, what are you going to do? Turn them out and let them gather back up and fight you again? No.
Yeah, you can't.
You enslave them. Same thing with tribal warfare in Africa.
Yeah, and same thing with tribal warfare across the West. We just got a better foothold on. We had some things that benefited us. We had dogs who enabled us to have stable communities because they were both watchdogs and augmented our hunting. We had the wheel, which Native Americans never developed. As Thomas Sowell speaks, we had a remarkably beneficent natural world. For example, Africa has no rivers that safely and reliably run to the sea all year long. A thriving economy requires access to water. Only the Nile had it, and you know, the Fertile Crescent of the Mediterranean. When you go inside Africa, it's an unbelievably hostile environment. So they really didn't ever get that running start they needed to get to the point we did. So we Europeans are not superior in any way. White skin does not make us superior, but certain natural phenomena in our world and certain belief systems, Judaism and Christianity, which took us away from animism, which means every rock is a god and every tree is a god, and it really slows down development. So we were able to get a running start, but we started where they did.
Right.
We came from where they did. But Europeans who went to Africa and who went to Latin America didn't have this long view of history. So they thought we're superior, they're inferior, rather than they can be us. And in fact, we can speed their process by helping them leap over the thousands of years it took us to develop to this point.
Right. Honestly, the education system is bleeding that part of our whole psyche away.
Yes. And what it's doing is the two wrongs make a right, because we discriminated against them and that was wrong. The only way to make it up to minorities and people in the non-Western worlds, I understand we're not supposed to say third world anymore because it's a pejorative, whatever. But the only way we can make it up to them is to self-flagellate, demean ourselves, say that we're evil and horrible and that we deserve to be abused. And that kind of sadomasochistic approach to history, to righting historic wrongs, is provably stupid. But as you and I discussed before the phone call started, my belief is that the leftists do not want to do any of this, that their actual goal is depopulation, because they have returned to being animists. They believe in Gaiaism, in earth worship, in plant worship, and their ultimate goal, they think that the elite, the nomenclatura, the powerful few, through all sorts of things, through endless wars, which help bring money to them, to their politicians, to the corporatism, and that eating bugs and that doing away with fossil fuel, returning us to a dark, cold world, that all these things, sterilizing our children, that these will decrease the population. The ultimate goal is a 90% decrease in the world population. And they envision this green pastoral land where they live lives of incredible beauty and luxury while a very small stratum of survivors labors for them and provides them with their needs. And so much of what they're doing, consciously or unconsciously, is intended to depopulate the world. As I said to you while we were during the break, the vision of the future is a wonderful future for them, and one that does not include either us or our progeny, unless our progeny are the ones working underground to sustain the lucky 10%.
Right. We're going to divert back to servitude, slavery.
Absolutely. It's inevitable, because the machines need to run on something. They're getting rid of the something on which the machines run. So unless some greater wisdom finally gets us to clean nuclear power and cold fusion, which they are completely opposed to, when the wind stops blowing and the sun stops shining and the water stops flowing, you're back to human labor. I mean, we'll be pedaling the bicycles to keep their refrigerators and their electric lights and their air conditioners going.
and we're advanced. So, you know, you said, I'm old school, I'm going to call it third world. They're trying to turn, the elite are trying to turn the globe into a third world place for them to frolic and to enjoy the fruits of others' labor.
Yeah, it's feudalism. We are being returned slowly but steadily to feudalism. And just look at California, the state in which, thankfully, I no longer live. It's got very slender bands of tremendous wealth along the northern coast around San Francisco and the southern coast around Los Angeles, and then in Sacramento, where the political power rests. But the rest of the state is impoverished. And it is, Victor Davis Hanson writes about what's been happening in the Central Valley, which used to be an affluent, stable, lush, beautiful place that was one of the great feeders of America. I mean, its fields fed America. And now, thanks to protecting the Delta smelt, you can drive miles and miles and miles, down I-5, down the Central Valley, and it's just dry. It's dead. Those once fertile lands have been returned to dust. And this is what they want to do everywhere. They're trying to, here's something very funny about California. They passed a law that says that all animals have to have a certain amount of space if their products are to be sold in California. So what this would require of hog farmers is increasing the space given to every hog by 30%, or every pig. And, you know, on the one hand, that's absolutely humane. It's decent. Animals don't have existential anxiety. They don't live in imminent fear of death, but they do experience fear and discomfort. But it's not that commercially viable. And what happened is that the law went all the way to the Supreme Court, and Judge Gorsuch said, no, who cares about it? Forget the Commerce Clause, where one state can't make it impossible for other states to do business with it. If California says hog farmers across America have to increase by 30% the space allocated to each hog, if those hog farmers want to sell their goods to California, so be it. It's no biggie. That's really pretty much what he said. But here's the really funny thing about this. The Democrat constituency is dependent on blacks and increasingly on Hispanics who come in droves illegally into California and Texas. Who do you think the biggest consumers of pig flesh are in California? Blacks and Hispanics. The California leftists have just taken food off the plate of their most important constituents, also Asians, who are very leftist. They're all people whose diets are dependent on pork products.
And they've priced them out of the market.
Yeah, they've priced them out of the market. And a lot of people just, you know, hog farmers in Iowa are just going to say, we'll do without California. Or if we market to California, everything's going to cost at least 30% more.
Right. So I'll have.
And so they are literally taking food off the plates of their most important constituents.
I'll have one section of my ranch for the hogs that are California hogs, and they'll have 30% mm-hmm. more space. And those I'm going to ship only to California because mm-hmm. I can get three times more than I can when I send some bacon down to Texas.
Right. But I'll also have to spend much more money to maintain these hogs, and it takes space away from having many more hogs. But it also takes food away from people. This is what leftists do. I mean, I think it's very funny that Gavin Newsom is being looked at as a great Democrat hope who can take over for Biden when they squeeze him out, however they manage to, and Kamala, who they buy off or give a seat on the Supreme Court or whatever. But I think across America, people look at California and think that's not a good look.
But California is very proud, and Newsom is one of them, that California is leading the way. We're going to be
leading the way.
We're going to be mm-hmm. carbon neutral by 2035 because we're not going to allow any more gas stations. We're only going to sell new cars that are electric.
Mm-hmm.
But I noticed, and I did a program a while back called Cause and Effect. And the thing that got me was they have tied road maintenance and buildup of infrastructure mm-hmm. to gasoline tax.
Exactly. So what they're now planning on doing, they're throwing around the idea of putting a monitor on your car and taxing you by the mile, which is what they're thinking about in all these places where they're trying to get rid of gas cars. But I have experience with electric cars, and let me just say that they're fun to drive because they've got incredible acceleration. And otherwise, they work only in dense urban environments. These are the ideas of people who never go to the flyover states and can't imagine a world in which you might have to drive hundreds of miles to get to the next community. When I've driven through parts of New Mexico, I've looked at my gas gauge and thought, oh my God, I really made a mistake here that I didn't get gas, because technically there are little communities here, but there's no guarantee the gas station is open, and there are no communities for 70 miles, and my car is telling me I have only 100 miles left in the tank. And those are simply one of the things that makes electric cars go further is stop and go traffic. They really are great commute cars. But if you're just doing lots of freeway driving, all they do is lose energy as you go.
And all these.
It's the braking. It's the braking that generates the energy. And so it's crazy. And also California is now the state you go where, you know, if you stand against transing your child, you may lose custody of your child. And mm-hmm. California is a state you go where your 10-year-old can get an abortion without telling you and turn into a boy without telling you. And California is the state you go where if you get mugged, you really pretty much will soon have to apologize to the mugger because they've been victimized by the system of which you are a part because, God forbid, you're the wrong racial caste system. California is a scary future.
When they claim that all of the thousands of dollars being smash and grab shoplifted out of these box stores is reparations, we have mm-hmm. a problem.
We have a problem. The really big problem, though, and California is leading the way, is California was in the forefront of lockdowns. For example, in South Carolina, lockdowns lasted about 4 months, and then people just said, pheh, went back to living. But because California and other Democrat cities have been in the forefront of lockdowns, they are trembling on the verge of a massive commercial property estate. And banks don't make their money on mortgages. Those aren't the money. The money for banks is commercial real estate. And if you thought 2008 was bad, all I can say is buy canned goods.
Right. And Patriot Supply, get freeze-dried foods, yeah, and be prepared.
Yeah. Yeah. It's coming, and it's going to be. But again, this is what leftists want, because when it collapses, the government will be the only source of everything and people will die. I mean, it is, if you're wondering why the government is letting this happen, it's because this is what the government under leftist aegis wants to have happen. Economic collapse is good for big government, and economic collapse is good for depopulation. And again, some of them may not even think this in their higher brain, but, you know, a little nodule in the back of their brain is saying, yeah, yeah, that's what you want. Go for it. Go for it.
You know, economic depression puts more of the American citizenry on the plantation.
Exactly.
And when you look at the side effects that are occurring, and now they're beginning to pop up more and more thanks to the gene therapy jabs that they pushed through. California was on the forefront of forcing vaccinations on people.
Mm-hmm. Children.
Yeah. And I hate calling it a vaccine because it's not a vaccine. It's not doing anything that is going to help build your, it's just destroying your reproductive system. How many women have miscarried? How many have stillborn? How many have become sterilized? How many men have become sterilized? And then you throw the idiocy of transgenderism and mutilating and giving drugs to preteens and teens that, well, you know, I like playing with BB guns and army men, and I don't like playing with dresses and dolls, so I guess I should be a boy. This mindset.
Yeah, the mindset that the gender binary doesn't apply, except the gender binary applies if your boy likes pink. Suddenly your boy is a girl. But here, I'll tell you something that, because all this is extremely depressing. Something that keeps me optimistic, actually two things. One of my children just got married, and not only was it a lovely wedding, but I didn't pay for it. So the kids paid for it, and they invited mostly their friends and their close family. But it wasn't like the old time wedding where mom and dad paid for it, and every guest there was mom and dad's social friend and country club friend and stuff. And these were lovely, normal young people. And it was very uplifting to see 50 or 60 normal young people. And the other thing is, and this leftist can't understand, because children to them are commodities and experiments and sexual toys and all sorts of things. But to parents, children are something extraordinary. It's even difficult to articulate the level of emotional investment a normal parent has in a child. And that investment is not just child will work on the farm. That investment is a recognition of the child's purity. And that doesn't mean children are inherently good. We have to teach children to be good, but they are something of a blank slate, and they are clean and fresh and healthy and whole. And parents who are beginning to see what the left wants to do to their children, to sexualize them, to mutilate their bodies, to make them loathe themselves as white predators or minority victims, parents are pushing back. You and I had mentioned libs of TikTok as someone who's bringing to light what the left wants for your children, and parents are finally seeing it and pushing back. And it is this pushback that I think may power the pendulum of America back to normal.
You know, hopefully the youth are being instructed, or they're tuned in to searching for truth and not buying the garbage that the propagandists are throwing out there. You know, children are a gift, and I've got 8 grandchildren. They are a huge gift to my wife and I. Love our grandkids to death. But when I look and I see parents that are willfully taking their children to drag queen story hour, that are taking them to these parades where these pedophiles are blatantly flashing their junk, that's not solid parenting. That's not good parenting.
It's terrible parenting. I think those people are in the minority, because even people I know who are Democrats, they are becoming frightened of what's heading towards their children. It's one thing to say, you know, pro-choice and every woman has a choice. And it's another thing to sit in a room with someone saying, well, you know, your son needs to be castrated because he's really a girl. And that is the bridge too far for parents. And that is what they are pushing back against. And, you know, kids are pushing back too. We're getting more and more stories of kids pushing back. When my kids were in school, they were being told things that they could not possibly know on their own. Climate change, you know, when the teacher stands at the center of the room and says, all the scientists say that the world is going to be destroyed in 10 years unless you make your parents, you know, stop buying cars or whatever, they believe that. But it's getting a lot harder for the kids to accept the lies they're being told about what's in their underpants. And the lies they're being told about the relationship between their male dad and their female mom. And what's also happening, as you know, what I always say is that men and women need each other, because men provide strength and women provide softness. Men are the hunters. Women are the gatherers. Women provide emotion. Men provide groundedness. And they keep each other, you know, women are the ones who say to the guys, no, you can't lie around all Saturday in your underwear. You have to go take care of the garden. You know, we push the men. And men, in turn, protect against women's out-of-control emotionalism. What you have with the whole transgender thing is unconstrained male aggression, which is a big problem with men who are not controlled by a father or a system or a woman. And you have unconstrained female emotionalism, which is a big problem with women when they're not grounded by men and by the system. And then you add in mental illness, and then you get these crazy people. And the crazy people are their own worst enemies. They think they're in charge and they're empowered and they're making it happen. And 13-year-olds are looking at them and thinking, you're gross and stupid and disgusting and yuck. And so it's really, really helpful, actually, that the left is fully revealing itself, especially to the teenagers.
And it can't come soon enough. All of the craziness that's going on. You know, we talked about this off air, but my hope is that each week when I cover something on this program, that I'm either making you think, making you angry to make you think some more, or you're in agreement, but you're going out and sharing these messages with the populace so that we can try to stem the tide of the loony left and this agenda to destroy this country. Andrea, we're out of time, and I want to say thanks for being there for me on short notice, because I think this topic needed to be discussed, and I appreciate you coming on the program with me.
Well, it's my pleasure. And to wrap it back, a last word about free speech. We talked about the craziness, because that is where the pushback comes from. And the war on free speech is to make sure nobody can talk about the crazy.
You know, this whole program, if they pass that law in Michigan, will be banned.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I work on the assumption that the FBI is tracking everything I say or do. And I stay within the letter and spirit of the law. So let them track.
Right. Ditto. Same here. Well, Andrea, I want to thank you for coming on, being a guest. I always enjoy our chats. I hope that we have sparked something in the listeners, and they will get out there and they will spread the word. They will act, and we will fight these evil beings that are pushing this hate speech garbage. I want to thank you for tuning in and giving us an hour of your time. Andrea and I greatly appreciate it. And as always, I pray you will tune in again next week at this same time. Tune in and discover the power of prophecy.